Hello, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning, I guess, still, for a few more minutes. Are you guys ready to get started? That was the most enthusiastic pre-lunch. Are you ready to get started? Okay, that's better. Much more convincing. This is going to be a Windows PowerShell crash course. A few folks have come up and asked if this is more beginner, more intermediate. The answer is yes, all of those. We're actually going to be covering some stuff that might seem a little bit beginner, but part of my goal here is to sort of peel back the hood on Windows PowerShell a bit and show you some things that you probably have already seen and you know that they work, but I want to show you why they work and how they work, because knowing why and how is going to let you go home and put things together for whatever tasks you need to complete. So rather than stand up here and try and show you five examples that maybe one of them you care about, I'm going to show you how the shell operates and let you go home and do your own thing with it. So just a brief bit about myself. My name is Don Jones. I am a Windows PowerShell MVP Award recipient. I am the author of a book called Learn Windows PowerShell in a Month of Lunches. That'll come up a bit later if you like. A quick couple claps if you've heard of the book or read the book. Oh, awesome. Thank you, and my mortgage company thanks you. I am also the PowerShell columnist for Microsoft TechNet Magazine, which is free and online. So you can go to technetmagazine.com. There's a new monthly article every single month about Windows PowerShell. And I blog about Windows PowerShell and answer questions. So if you run across anything with Windows PowerShell, you want to ask me a question, go to powershell.com. That's where you'll find my blog. I'm also in the Ask the Experts forum there. And there's a bunch of other forums that are specific to SharePoint and Active Directory and everything else. It's all free. And it's a great place to get advice from the rest of the community. So our goal here is going to be to really look at some of the key things that make PowerShell unique. What makes it PowerShell instead of Bash or Command.exe or something else? How does the shell actually work? And how can you take maybe four things, four really key concepts, and turn that into whatever you need the shell to be, whatever tasks you need to complete? These are what I call the secret sauce in Windows PowerShell, the magic. If you can get these things in your head eventually, then you will literally be able to do anything that the shell is capable of doing. So, you know, everybody's aware that it's Windows Server 2012 now, right? Have you seen the level of things that you can manage with Windows PowerShell? It's pretty much all of it. So now is definitely the time, and go home and share this with your colleagues. Now is the time to learn PowerShell or start thinking about other career options. If you are going to be an IT pro in the Microsoft world, PowerShell is as much a part of your life as the mouse. And keep that in mind, and make sure everybody back at the office gets that message too, because ignoring PowerShell has been safe up till now. Now it's starting to become a little perilous. This is going to be almost 99% PowerShell and not PowerPoint. I do have some slides that I'm going to use to kind of guide me through my little agenda here, but I'm not going to switch over to those slides much. We're mainly just going to stick inside PowerShell. Please keep in mind that you will have access to all of these decks after the show, so you will get the slides that I'm going to be peering at over on the side here. You will get everything. Also, if you need to see any of my little demos again, much of this stuff is up on my YouTube channel. So you can just go to this URL there, hit that up, and you'll be able to, I've probably got 300 little 5-minute videos up there. So you can walk through pretty much all of this stuff if you need a little bit of a refresher. This is a great time to ask questions. If you're one of the few people who's joined me up front, you can just shout your question. If you're one of the millions sitting in back, if you don't mind using one of the floor mics so I can hear you a little bit more easily. It's even tough to see you raise your hands when I got these spotlights, so stick with those floor mics. So, first law of PowerShell. A lot of people like to believe that PowerShell is a scripting language. It's the new scripting language after VBScript. I like to disagree with them, create a little bit of a challenge for them. And it isn't a scripting language. It's a command line shell. In much the same way that Bash and C shell and Bourne and all those other shells exist in the Unix world, this is our shell for Windows. Like any good shell, it does contain a scripting language. But it's not like VBScript. VBScript had something like 300 keywords. PowerShell's scripting language is more like 24, 30, something like that. It's a shell scripting language. It's designed to get stuff done, not to be a programmer. Now, if you happen to be a programmer, there's nothing wrong with that. You can certainly approach the shell that way. It will certainly let you treat it like a programming language. So if that's where your comfort is, go for it. But if you're not a scripter, you're not a programmer, how many of you are not scripters or programmers? Okay, quite a lot of us. You don't have to be, so don't let that hold you back. If you're up on someone's blog and they've posted this 500-line masterpiece, and you're like, yeah, don't want to do that. You don't have to. That's how they approached the shell. It is not the only way to approach the shell. And that's kind of one of the things to really wrap your head around, is that a lot of different people can use PowerShell in a lot of different ways. We today are going to focus on it as a command line interface. Type a command, hit enter, get results, go home happy. As we go, we're going to pay attention to a few specific things. And this is where I will go ahead and switch over. Hopefully, there we go. PowerShell really tries to be very consistent so that when you learn something one time, you get to use that something many different ways. So, you know, nice, simple little command, get process. Doesn't do anything too impressive. It gets a list of processes, exactly what the name implies. But the way that command is structured is important. All these PowerShell commands use this verb-singular noun naming convention. So if you knew that there was a command called get process and it retrieved a bunch of processes, what would the command be to get a bunch of Exchange mailboxes? Shout it out, get mailbox, right. What about an Active Directory user? You might guess get user. You might guess get AD user, something like that. And actually, that guessing is an important part of why that naming convention is there. It's not so much that you're going to be able to get the name right away on your first guess. It's because you will be able to make that first guess. And once you've made that guess, you can use PowerShell's help system with a couple of wildcard characters. Everybody knows the star character, right? Splat is a wildcard character, just like it is in command.exe for files and folders. Counts as a wildcard character here. So if you wanted to do something like, I don't know, find some commands that would let you manage the firewall, there they are. And I'm using PowerShell version 3. This is the version that will ship with Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012. It'll be available for some older versions of Windows as well once that comes out. One of the neat things this does is it doesn't make you load anything into memory. You don't have to load any of its extensions or modules into memory in order for it to be able to do that trick. I don't have that loaded into memory right now. The help system has just gone and looked to see what was available in terms of commands on my system, and it's showing me that. So once I've got that information, I can use the help system to get more specific help. So let's just say set net firewall. No, that's not going to. I'm hitting tab there, and the new version comes with so many commands that I have to type a little bit more than I'm used to with the older version. So I can ask for help. It's now going to load that thing into memory for me and show me some help. This is the first thing that's going to get a lot of people upset. Because let me tell you something. This is kind of the second rule for Windows PowerShell. If you are the type of person who does not like to read the friendly manual, if you're not that person, you are going to fail at PowerShell. How many of you have ever put together the furniture, like the IKEA furniture? Or, did you ever not read the directions when you did that? Yeah, I had a bookcase fall over on my dog one time. Those little cam lock things are important, it turns out. But the instructions for how to use PowerShell and what to do with it are here. They're built into it. You will not succeed at PowerShell if you do not like to read instructions. So just accept that. Embrace that right now. If you're telling yourself, look, there's absolutely no way I'm ever going to read the help files, you might as well just get up and leave. Because you're just not going to be successful with the shell. This is how it teaches you how to use itself. Got a problem here, though. Because I'm using PowerShell version 3, it's awesome that all these great commandlets are in Windows, but it says right at the bottom that it can't actually find the help files. But it turns out that in prior versions of PowerShell, which did come with help, Microsoft had some problems where, you know, they would lock down the help files, and then later they would lock down the code. So what do you think happens in that space of time? The help files become wrong, and then they wind up having to ship wrong help files, which killed them as people because they try to do a good job. So they're not shipping help. Instead, you just have to come down and run a little utility. I've run this a couple times today, so I'm going to put this force just to force it to re-download the stuff so you can see it happen. It's not really a super lengthy process. Now, today, because we're still in beta, there's not actually help out there for every single thing yet. You can see there's a module there it wasn't able to get the information for. And that'll come as this thing matures towards release. But you can see it only took a few seconds. You know, worst case, maybe this takes 5 minutes. Just put it in your PowerShell profile script. Every time you start the shell, it runs. Don't include the minus force, because by default, it will not bother even checking for help if it's already done so in the last day. So you can just stick that in your profile. Every time the shell pops up, you'll have all the help files you need, and even if it has to update every single one of them, go to the snack machine, get a Twizzler. By the time you get back, it'll be long done. So it's not a big deal. This way, anytime the team or any other team that is making PowerShell commands, anytime they want to add an example or fix a typo or put some more help in there to make it easier, they're able to ship that down to you right away. They can publish this whenever they want to. They don't have to wait for Patch Tuesday. They don't have to wait for a service pack. They can get it to you right then. This is a huge deal, being able to really rely on the help system. Now, you'll see a lot of people run get help, and that's fine. I can run get help, get process. I like to pipe it to more, so it creates that page at a time display. And really, if you just run help, that is doing the pipe more sort of for you underneath the hood. So you can use whichever one you want. All I ask is this. As you start using the shell and as you start reading about commands and learning how to use them, how many of you have used VBScript before? Okay. If you needed an example on some particular thing, where did you go for examples? Google, right? It's a verb in our language now. Do me a favor. Don't do that with PowerShell. Just run help with minus full. You could actually run it with minus example, but I like the full help because it breaks down every single parameter and tells me exactly what every single one of these does. And then at the end of it, all right, this is a simple command. This is get process. This is not rocket science, but it still manages to come up with 10 different examples on different ways you can use the command. You don't have to go spend all your time on the internet. The examples are already here. And if you want more, pop in a minus online. That will open up the help file on the TechNet website where at the bottom, yes, please ask me never, where at the very bottom you can find community contributed content. So MVPs like myself, folks like you, you can log in with your Microsoft .NET Hotmail Live Passport ID, you can add examples, you can clear up confusion, and all of that sits up there. So that's a permanent resource. It's another great one. How many of you have two monitors at work? Don't you love that? I actually will use the minus online a lot because it lets me float that window off to the other monitor so I can read the help whilst I'm typing the command, which is a lot better. And now, in PowerShell version 3, you can have it use the local help in a floating window like that, too. So if you happen to be on a machine and you're not connected to the internet, you can pull that up. It's really convenient. If it seems like I'm super stressing the help system, I am. It is the single most important thing in the shell. How many of you have ever done anything in Active Directory users and computers? Okay, good number. Close your eyes for a second. Go back to that simpler, gentler, more innocent time. You've just opened up the Active Directory users and computers console. It's right in front of you. What's the first thing you did? You hovered over toolbars, right, to see the little pop-up, the tooltip. Or you expanded the tree view. Or you right-clicked something, right, to find out what you could do. Those are called discoverability features. They're what enable us to figure out the tool. How many of you have ever read the manual for Active Directory users and computers? Yeah, I didn't think so. Like two people. And you were bored that day and you had to have something to do, right? That's why you did it. When you get to a command line interface, it's a little tougher. There's no toolbars, there's no tooltips, there's no right-clicking, there's no context menus, there's no tree views. The help system is PowerShell's discoverability mechanism. If you're thinking, you know, I've got some programming experience in VBScript, let's say, and I want to know how to do an if construct, help if. It's going to look for it, and one of the things it'll come up with are some of these about files, or if you're from the north, they're about files. And these are the rest of PowerShell's manual, its operating manual. These explain how to use all the things that are built into Windows PowerShell. So, with that in mind, tell me, what do you think this will do? Who dares me to push enter? There, I'll push enter. Oh, yeah, crashed my demo. So most commands in PowerShell, and this is definitely the majority. I've only run across a couple third-party ones that didn't do this. Microsoft's much more consistent. Most commands, like stop process, that modify the system will support a parameter called what if and another one called dash confirm. that will actually ask you, are you sure, are you sure, are you sure, are you sure? And there's preferences you can set to even have that happen automatically with commands of varying severity levels. So you can get in and really customize that. But what's important here is not what that did or what it would have done. What's important here is why it would have done it. This is one of the core key elements of Windows PowerShell that make it absolutely unique in the world and make it so powerful. So to talk about why that works, we've got to get some terminology straight. If I run a command like get service, can we all agree that that's a table display? A table of text, right? I mean, you could see something like that being put into Excel, right? Columns, rows, so forth. Looking at this, we're looking at services here. Do you think these three pieces of information are all that there is to be known about services? No, of course not. What's missing? Yeah, quite a bit. Description, dependent services, start mode, like does it start automatically disabled, whatever else, the logon name, whatever account it's using. There's a lot of other information in there. The point is, when you run a command in PowerShell, it does produce all of that information in its head. It produces a very large table with all of that data in its head. If you don't tell it to do anything else, it will eventually have to display that data like it did on the screen. It knows it's not all going to fit. And so there's just some configuration files that say, hey, if you weren't told to do anything different, just pick these ones out. That's probably a good guess at what the person was looking for. So how can you find out what else there is? Well, you could go to Google or Bing or whatever your favorite search engine is and spend a long time trying to find out what else the get service command can do, but you don't need to, because after help, here's the most important command in PowerShell. Any command that produces output. In other words, if you run the command and it normally displays something on the screen, that's output. So any command that normally displays something on the screen can be piped to get member. This is just like piping something to more. How many of you have ever run dir pipe more? Okay, same idea, except this isn't creating a paginated display. This is looking at what was produced, and anything that's called a property is a potential column that could have been displayed on the screen right then. So these are all the other things I've got to work with. Now, the other important piece of output that's really easy to overlook is this one right here. That tells me that the type of data structure, the unique name for the data structure produced by GetService, is a system.serviceProcess.ServiceController. Now, PowerShell was made for administrators, and we are a I don't want to say lazy bunch, we're just really busy, and so we don't have time to say all that. So as a shortcut, you can typically just refer to something by whatever comes after the last period. So as a shortcut, I would say that the GetService command produces service controller things. Now, PowerShell was written by software developers, and they do have their terminology that they like, so we've got to get used to that. In their terminology, every one of these rows, which represents a single service, in this case, every row is an object. That's the word that you've got to use to describe a row. And every column is a property. So that kind of makes sense, because this column, name, that's one of the properties that showed up. Display name is another one, and status is another one. Those bits of information, combined with one more thing I'm about to show you from the help files, will let you do anything you want to in PowerShell. So let's talk about why get process, stop process actually works. When you run a command like this, PowerShell runs the first command, and it's got all these processes now, and it has to decide what to do with them. It knows that these need to somehow be given to the next command, because that's what the pipe character tells it. But commands in PowerShell can only accept data on one of their parameters. So they've got command line switches, right? I can run get process and give it a specific computer name. That's one command line switch. There's a bunch of others I can give it to customize its behavior. When you pipe something from one command to the next, PowerShell has got to give that data to a parameter. So there's a process called pipeline parameter binding, whereby PowerShell figures out what to do with the data. It has two plans. There's only two possible things it could do. Here's the first plan. It's called by value. So if you want to write that down, this is a good thing to make a note on, by value. Let's take a look at the help for stop process. The full help, by the way, because the short help won't show you this information. Now, we know that get process produces a certain type of object. We didn't look at it, though, so we need to do that. Get process, pipe to get member. Oops. The tab completion with all these commands in here. There we go. So get process produces objects of the type process. All right, that was fairly intuitive. Could have probably figured that out. Let's look at the help for stop process now. Full. Do you guys see any parameters that could accept that type of object? I mean, I've got ID, and that accepts an integer. That's not what I have. I have a process. I've got name. That accepts a string. And that's not what I have. I have a process. Do you see anything that accepts a process? Input object right there. We need to see if it's capable of accepting that from the pipeline using plan A, which is by value. So we're going to go down and look at input object specifically. There it is at the top of the screen. It can accept a process. Those two square brackets that are jammed together right after the word process, you see those? I'll make sure everyone sees that. These mean it can accept more than one. So I can actually give this a whole mess of process objects, but will it accept them from the pipeline? Yes, it will. And it will do it by value. So that's plan A. So PowerShell is going to run get process. It's going to take all the processes and attach them to input object. And input object stops those processes. That's why that works. Now, this is, I think, a lot more fun when you do something like this. Who thinks that makes sense? Who thinks it makes no sense at all and won't work? Yeah, the right answer is somewhere in between. But let's look at why. So we know that getProcess produces objects of the type process. Let's look for help, stop service, full help. Are there any parameters of stop service that will accept a process object? It does have that input object, but it doesn't want a process. It wants a service controller, so that won't work. I don't see anything on here that'll accept a process. That means plan A is dead, no good anymore. PowerShell is going to shift to plan B. Plan B is called by property name. So all we need to do is look at that help again. And we're going to try and identify every single parameter, and I'm going to need your help writing it down, so get your pen ready. We need to identify every parameter that is hooked up to accept pipeline input by property name. And the help will show us. All right, display name, no. Exclude, no. Force, no. Include, no. Input object accepts pipeline input, but not by property name. It only does it by value, and we already gave up on that plan. The name parameter, minus name, write that down, because it accepts pipeline input by property name. Pass through doesn't, confirm doesn't, what if doesn't. So we've only got one option here, name. We need to go back now and look at those process objects again. Does this process object have a name property? There it is. It's an alias property, but that's okay. Any type of property will do. So here's what happens. Just because this is spelled N-A-M-E, and because the parameter of the next command is spelled N-A-M-E, they'll hook up. So I'm going to get process names. These are going to hook up to the minus name parameter of stop service, and it's going to try and do its thing. I'm not expecting it to go well, so don't panic. How many of you remember high school English class? You could tell how well I did on a paper by weighing it before and after the teacher got done with her pen. And so when I'm running in the shell and I see this, I go to a very bad place in my head. I think I just failed. Don't let that panic you, though. It's okay. Sometimes error messages are expected. And if I scroll through here, I might even find one that succeeded. But what it's telling me is, look, you gave me a name called coherence, and I couldn't find a service that had that name, so it failed. And essentially, that's every single one of these, is it's just looking for services based on process names, But even if a service is running, its executable isn't often the same as its actual name, right? The names are prettier and longer. And so PowerShell is just telling me it failed. The important part of the exercise, though, is understanding that that's how PowerShell puts these different things together. This is how it connects these commands, because you can start to leverage that on your own. Here's a really good example. On a domain controller, there's a module called Active Directory, and it has a command called new AD user. What do you think that does? Yeah, the command names are really cryptic, right? It's hard to figure out what they do. It's going to create a new AD user. And it's got a bunch of parameters. It's got things like department, and it's got title, and it's got SAM account name. These things are all familiar, right? You guys know what these are? These are essentially the same dialog box fields that you would fill in the GUI. It's just a command line way to do it. This command has all of those parameters hooked up to accept pipeline input by property name. So here's something kind of fun. Let's do this. Let's make I'm just going to save this as a text file. This is my business partner. He usually doesn't do very well in these demos because he's in Denver. What type of file have I created here? It's a CSV file, yeah. You might make this in Excel or export it from a database or whatever else. Now, the neat thing is, let's save this. I'm going to switch over to my documents directory. There's that file. Even though I didn't give it a CSV file name extension, I can still ask PowerShell to import it as a CSV file. And when it does so, it actually parses that. It breaks it down so that my column headers become properties, and each row becomes an object. So I created two rows, and I've got two objects. I had five column headers. Therefore, each object has five properties. You see where I'm going with this, anyone? If I wanted to make new users out of this, that's all I have to do. Except, that's not very realistic. I don't want to give you something that's not very realistic. Look, where in your organization would this type of a file generally originate? HR. And are they going to get it right? No. They're going to go, well, there's no one named Sam. That's just silly. We'll call it login name instead. And that's probably what the silly administrator wanted. And you're going to get that. And you're going to go into the shell, and you're going to try to import that. And it imports just fine, except now we've got a login name and not a SAM account name. Can you create a new user in Active Directory with a blank SAM account name? Yes, you can. You can do it once, because it's still unique the first time. If you try to do it the second time, you'll get an error message. Let me step aside for just a second from this example. The toughest part about PowerShell is not PowerShell. It's the fact that we've been so insulated from the underlying technology by the GUI forever that we often don't really realize what's happening under the hood. Active Directory users and computers, the GUI console, won't let you make a user with a blank SAM account name, but Active Directory is just fine with it the first time. So what you will find is that as you get better with PowerShell, you're going to spend more time banging your head against the technology, whatever it is you're managing. But once you come through that process, you will be a better administrator because you will know more about what that technology is actually doing. That will make you a better troubleshooter. It will make you a better automator. It will make you a better human being. The last part is not guaranteed, but it's a good chance. So what can we do to correct this situation? Other than getting rid of HR, because much as we'd like to do that, it's probably not going to happen. We could open this up and change it, right? Just fix the file. Except we're going to have to do that every time they ship us a new one. That sounds like manual repetitive labor. If only there was a device we could create to do manual repetitive labor for us. We could call it a computing machine or a computer or something like that. Let's let PowerShell fix it. Here's my import command. I'm going to use a command called select object. This is going to let me specify the properties that I want, and I want all of them. Everything in that file is fine with me. My problem is that I need another one called Sam account name. And I need that to be populated with whatever stupid HR put into the login name field. I realize that syntax is a little bit chewy. When you download the slide deck after the show, this is in there. It's also in the examples for select object. Not that I'm trying to push you to read the help files every 5 minutes, but you should. Let's just see what that looks like. Yes? So you're referring to some of the simplified syntax. That doesn't apply to this particular command. So no, you still have to use the $_ here. What I've done is I've kept everything that was in the file. Login name is still there. It won't matter. It's not going to match up to a parameter of new AD user, so it'll just ignore it. But now I've got my Sam account name, and so I could run new AD user. Neat stuff, right? Knowing that this is how the pipeline works, knowing how to manipulate the data in the middle of the pipeline, right? These are two commands that normally would not have matched quite precisely enough to do the job. But I was able to modify it midstream to force them to fit together. And we're admins. We like to hit things with hammers, admit it. Hey, there's a red light blinking on that hard drive. Whack, now it's out. So this is the hammer you can put in the middle to make everything fit together. Knowing that that's how the pipeline works is a key to really letting you manipulate PowerShell and not have to write extensive scripts, but to do stuff in these shorter, more concise one-liners. How many of you have software developers where you work? You know how developers can sit and argue for days over four lines of code because one of them thinks he can do it in three lines of code? And as administrators, we're like, did it work? Awesome, go home. Much more pragmatic. Until PowerShell came out, and now we will sit and argue about whether or not we can make something into a one-liner because it's so much cooler that way. There's even shirts, silence or I will replace you with a one-liner that you can wear around the office and let everybody know how you really feel. So these are great tricks. Show you another great trick. I'm going to use the old school syntax just because. What's that going to do? Yeah. It'll produce a list of services that are running. And this is older syntax. Version 3 of PowerShell has a newer alternate form that's a little bit simplified, but I wanted to point this out because it's not that hard. And this will always work in every version of PowerShell. And this is what you're going to see on the 6 years' worth of internet blogging that's been going on. So yeah, it's not the simplest syntax in the world. The $_ thing is a little wacky, but you can figure it out. If you squint and maybe have a drink, it all makes sense. So PowerShell's got this cool command. What do you think that's going to do? It's going to convert it to HTML, yeah, and there it is. HTML is sometimes more useful in a file. You can do this. How many of you know this syntax? Yeah? PowerShell supports that. Really, under the hood, this is all it's doing. And if you kind of get in the habit of using the full syntax and the full command, you'll find you get a lot more options. And it's a little bit easier for someone else to come along in 6 months and figure out what the heck you were talking about. So that put that into a file for me. I could go down here to my InterTubes Explorer. It's not the beautifulest HTML in the world, but there are certainly ways to make it more beautiful. Where do you think you could learn more about convert to HTML and how it can make things prettier? Read the help. Yes, exactly. It turns out almost every single command in PowerShell can do some cool thing that nobody realizes because none of them have read the help. I've been working with this product for, it feels like seven or so years now, and I still will put stuff out there and someone will say, you know, you could have done that by just this one extra parameter on that command. Like, oh, no, I didn't. I guess I should read the help. So even with commands you've been using over and over for years, make sure you do that. Let me show you a big gotcha with PowerShell, though. Let's just get the name and the status off of this guy. And then let's put that in a CSV file. Who's done something like this before? And if you've not done it, are you thinking to yourself, yeah, I could see that, right? Make a table out of it, put it into a CSV file, that makes perfect sense to me. Here's the problem, and this is a huge gotcha, and the only way you come across this is if somebody tells you or you spend 3 days trying to figure out why it didn't work. If I actually look at that file, it doesn't contain my service information. Look at the very first line of text. This contains internal PowerShell gobbledygook, blah, 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 blah. I have no idea what this is. The trick is, in PowerShell, once you format something, you have lost whatever data you were originally working with. The format commands output that specialized internal information whose sole purpose is to construct a display for on-screen. That can be redirected to a file, a text file, or a printer, but it's going to look in the file or on the paper. It's going to look just like it would have looked on the screen. So here's the simple rule in PowerShell. If you have run a format command, stop. You're done. There's nothing more after this. If you have a pipe after a format command, the next thing had better be out file or out printer, or you're going to be banging your head against a wall for 3 hours trying to figure out why it did what it did. Once you have formatted something, you are done. That said, you can do some awesome stuff with formatting. Get WMyObject, let's grab some disk information. I only really want to grab my local disks, or this will take too long. And let's pipe it to format table. And let's tell it that we want to look at the device ID, the drive type, and you know, by default, this has got a property called free space and one called size, and they're in bytes. How many of you still think about disk space in bytes? I don't even know what a byte fits anymore. What's a more reasonable measurement? Gigabytes, megabytes, maybe? If my disk free space is in megabytes, I'm panicky, so we'll stick with that. Here's that same little trick again. Let's call it free space in megabytes. And we're going to populate that with whatever was in the old free space property divided by 1 megabyte. PowerShell understands KB, MB, GB, TB, PB. They're base 2 values, so technically it's a gibibyte, petabyte, or pebibyte, tibibyte, kibby. It sounds like dog food, but just the abbreviations are fine. We'll put that, and because we are formatting for a screen display, this is the format command, we get to control the layout of it. I can, for example, say, I don't want to see the decimal portion of this, right? I don't want to see 1.7825644. Just show it to me as a floating point number with 2 decimal places. That'll be fine. While you're at it, align it to the right, and let's make it not wider than 10 characters. And you can see that it forcibly wrapped that column header because I didn't give it enough room to actually display the whole thing, and that's why I did that. So there's a lot of space in the middle, isn't there? So by default, these tables try to fill the whole screen. So let's just up arrow and tell it to auto-size that, and that's much prettier. Now I could redirect that to a file or to a printer. So you can see where you can really start to construct some impressive-looking, very detailed, very custom-y output without really having to program. Yeah, the syntax is a little goofy. I totally acknowledge that. But once this syntax gets into your head, you're fine. You know what? I'll prove it. In command.exe, DOS, what's the command to display a list of files and folders? Dir. You had to learn that. I assure you, you did not sit down in front of a computer one day and go, you know, I bet dir is an interesting thing to type. What's the command to change directories? CD write, that makes no sense. So you've already learned stupid, goofy syntax. Now you just get to learn a little bit more. Speaking of which, do you know that same stupid, goofy syntax gets used a lot more in PowerShell? PowerShell lets you use that in a lot more ways. Look, dir, right? This gets me a list of files and folders. Who agrees that this what I'm using here, this file system, could loosely be referred to as a hierarchical database. Yeah, it's folders, subfolders, subfolders. What other hierarchical databases comes with every copy of Windows? Yeah, the registry. It's always annoyed me that I couldn't just CD to the current HKEY current user and type dir to get a listing of registry keys, maybe CD software and dir to that, del star dash, no wait, recurs, that'd be bad. It carried away. But PowerShell has this entire inbuilt system of what's called a provider. These are, I think of them as adapters. They make some form of storage look like a disk drive. And you can add more of these things in. There's one for Active Directory and SQL Server and IIS and everything else. So all these things can be managed using that same goofy syntax that you learned 20 years ago so that you could manage DOS. Anybody with Unix or Linux? Yeah, you can use those commands too. LS, all works, everything else. In Unix, instead of typing help, you would type man. I don't like to use that because it's a little gender biased. And I think in today's world, I think we could be a little bit more sensitive. It's not actually a command in PowerShell. It's something called an alias. It's just a shortcut. It's a quicker way of typing. The actual, if you look at help for man, it'll show you that the real command is get help. But the aliases are nice because they are shorter. They let you type quicker. Do you know how you can get a list of all the aliases? You could type get alias, or you could type gal, which I think nicely balances man. It's something for everybody in PowerShell. So this is going to give me a list of everything. It's going to show me what command it maps to, what the actual alias is. And that's certainly useful stuff. So how many of you, kind of when you were at home sitting thinking about coming to MMS and you looked at this session and you signed up for it or you made a note to think about it, how many of you thought it was going to be kind of a scripting class? How many of you want to see a script? All right. Scripts in PowerShell don't have to be all that complex. Let's do something. Let's get crazy. I'm just going to run a little command. I'm going to stick the results of this command into a variable so I can reuse them later. Get WMyObject class Win32 operating system. We'll just get it from localhost right now. And let's grab Win32 computer system from the same one. One of the tricks that you start to get used to in Windows PowerShell is this idea of the pipeline. Now, I'll see folks produce scripts that create this incredibly complex textual output, and I die inside a little bit. I've got a saying that, in fact, if you go up to shellhub.com, this is just my random PowerShell stuff. It's only like a four-page website. But there's a page of Proverbs, and one of them says that every time someone creates a PowerShell script that produces pure text, God kills a puppy. And I want you to think about that before you start writing scripts that manually produce things like CSV or HTML output, because PowerShell will do all that work for you if you play by its rules. And here's the rule. This is the simple rule. Every script that you write gets to output one kind of thing. That's it. One kind of thing. Now, in this case, I'm starting with two different things. I cannot just output both of them. I need to somehow munge them together. I need to combine them. Pretty easy way to do that. I'm going to create something called a hash table or a dictionary associative array. This is actually the same type of thing we were doing with that custom property and that custom column. I just don't have to follow the same rules with this type of hash table because it's not being used by those particular commands. I can be a little bit more freeform. I can put my computer name in here. That's good to have. PowerShell is cool with you hitting enter after a semicolon and a few other characters. It will read this all as one giant line, but I get the formatted a little bit nicer this way. Let's say OS version. We'll put the service pack version in here too. And very important that you get the punctuation correct. Let's go with MFGR is the system manufacturer. And we'll put model in as the system.model. You can obviously expand this out as much as you want to, make it as long, complicated, squeeze as much information together as you want. And when you're done, I'm going to create an object, and I'm going to use new object. PowerShell gives us an actual type of object called a PS object. It's a blank canvas. You can stick anything on there you want, and I just want it to. I want to put those five things on there. Those are the five pieces of information I care about. That's what I want this to do. So let's just let me save this. We'll call it test. Nah, actually, you know what? Let's not call it test. Let's give it a name. get-osinfo.ps1. Would you like to save in the my? Oh yeah, that's fine. We'll put it in my documents folder. I am not running the ISE here, this editor. I'm not running it as administrator, so it doesn't want me to save. Doesn't want to let me save things there. You guys, if you notice in the title bar, it does not say administrator. But if I go over to the regular shell, which I ran as administrator, it says administrator. That's your cue. If it doesn't say administrator, you ain't. So you would right-click and say run as administrator. But let's come down here. Let me make sure I have script execution enabled. I am absolutely positive that's what I want to do. Let's change to my home folder and see if get-os-info is there. There it is. I'm going to run it, and I get nothing. You know why? I didn't output my object. Write output. $obj. Try again. There we go. It's good output. So let's say that this is some piece of information that your help desk has to frequently pull up about different computers. So now all you have to do is give them this file. Tell them, look, before you run it, you need to open it up in Notepad, and you need to go change the computer name to whatever computer name you're going to query. You've got to change it in three places. Make sure you get all three places, but don't change anything else, because if you change anything else, it don't work. And be careful of the semicolons, because if you delete the semicolons, it's all going to go, how's this going to end? I broke it. Can you come fix it? No problem. Let's just build a little parameter for them. We'll default it to localhost. We'll make sure PowerShell knows it's a string. But now all I have to do is a little copy-paste action. Do-do-do-do-do. Isn't that cool? I've got an unclosed quotation mark. That's why it's all freaky out with the red underlinies. But it tells me what's wrong, and as soon as I fix it, bing, it all goes away. We'll save that. Now, here's how smart this product is. Here's my script. I'm going to type a dash and a C and hit tab, and it's going to read that thing and complete the parameter for me. I don't even have to type at all. So I can run it against whatever I want to, and it'll work. That, frankly, right there is pretty awesome. It means you can start building tools to give to other people, and they're going to look and work a lot like PowerShell's real commands. They even have the ability to provide help. Oops. get-os-info. Well, that's kind of crappy. Tell you what. How many of you have some scripting experience and believe that it's a good idea to document with some comments what goes on in your script? Yeah, I'm with you. Let's do this. How many of you have sort of a little format you like to use for that little comment block up top? So those of you who do have a little format you like to use, reach inside of your brain and take that bit and throw it out. I got a new format for you. This is called comment-based help. This serves two purposes, unlike your old-school document block that you put at the top. I spit on the old-school document block. Mine is legible to someone who's reading this script file, and mine can be parsed by PowerShell and turned into a complete help script. Did I put an example in? Oh, right. Minus full. There's my example, and it even numbers them for me. So if you have multiples, there's the help that I added to the computer name parameter. So you would read about this, shockingly, in a help file called about comment-based help. And it will walk you through all of the little keywords that it uses to define all the different sections of the help file. And now your little script is going to look and feel and smell a lot like a real PowerShell command. Well, almost. How many of you are thinking that localhost is kind of a stupid default? Yeah, a few folks. What would you rather do? Prompt? You want to prompt for it? Sure, let's prompt for it. This little trick here, adding this commandlet binding, actually turns on magic. David Copperfield, much as we love him here in this town, got nothing on commandlet binding. Because now all I have to do is tell PowerShell, yep, that's a mandatory parameter. He's got to type it. So if I come out here and I use a real PowerShell command, get event log. I didn't provide a log name, so PowerShell prompts me for it. If I don't enter anything, it says, you're an idiot. I needed that information, and I can't run the command. But at least I know what's happening. So now let's try my getOSInfo. I'm not going to give it anything at all, and it's going to prompt me in that exact same way for that information. And if I hit enter, it's going to say the exact same thing. You're an idiot. I need that information. So my little script is starting to behave just like a real PowerShell command. And you can actually take these structures and do more with them. You can tell it to accept pipeline input, so I can pipe things to this. You can tell it to validate this. You know, I have to contact these things, computers in sequence, so if he gives me multiple computer names, don't take more than 5. I want to keep the performance under control. And PowerShell will do all of the work for you. You just have to tell it what it is you want. So here's another help file for you. Help about functions advanced parameters. That one's a long one. That walks through all those cool little things you can tell PowerShell about a parameter, and you can just plug those into your script and let it do literally all the work for you. You'll notice that I did not produce text from that. GetOSInfo, computer name. How many of you think you might someday need to put that into a CSV file? Fine, just pipe it to convert. Sorry, you could use that. This is probably quicker. Export CSV. Maybe you prefer a little XML. Maybe you would just like to see it as a table on the screen. Maybe what you would prefer is HTML. The point is that by making my script not care about the output, by not trying to do the output at all, by simply giving PowerShell an object, that data structure that it knows how to deal with, I can now take advantage of everything else the shell knows how to do. If somebody has written an out Excel command, and by the way, someone did, I can just pipe my stuff right to that. If somebody clever were to write a command called, I don't know, out grid view, then PowerShell would be able to consume my output and display a nice graphical dialog box to a user. So by really thinking about how PowerShell wants to work, how it's built to work, and working with it instead of trying to make it VBScript or something else, by really understanding how it wants to work and working with it, you work less, it does more, and you get more built-in flexibility. So if someone comes down the road later on and says, hey, we don't need that in a CSV file anymore, we need it in XML, you can go, great, I'm going to take 8 hours to make that change, and by make that change, I mean go to the zoo, because I don't have to make any changes. So just by playing within the rules, you get a lot of free capability automatically. And remember what happens if you're writing a script that outputs text. That's bad. Poor puppies. Can anybody think of one instance in here where you might just want a little bit of text on the screen? If you've written some scripts before, you've probably done this with like an echo command or something like that. Just like little step-by-step status information, you know? You'll see folks do this. I don't have a problem with this. I can use that variable directly inside of double quotation marks. PowerShell will replace it with its contents, so I don't have to concatenate strings together. I don't have a problem using this, you know, just for that step-by-step information. I don't have a problem. God does. Puppies. Okay? If that's your goal, is to just give you that little status information, the command to use is write verbose. Go down here to the shell, and I'm going to run that again. Does everybody see my verbose output? No, because I didn't type minus verbose to turn it on. But see, now I get my status information in a way that I can shut on or off without having to go comment things out in my script. Different applications that host PowerShell might capture that verbose information and display it or store it or log it in a different way because it's being treated as verbose status information. So if you ask the command get command to get you all the commands that use the verb write, you'll see that there is a write that is specific to almost every situation. There's warnings, there's errors, there's debug information, there's verbose. You don't need, in most cases, to use write host, which only writes to the screen. That information is harder to capture into a file if that's what you want to do. It's just putting pixels onto the screen and puppies' lives in danger. So focus on the commands that are designed to do what it is you want to do. Again, work with PowerShell. Find out how it wants to behave, and you will be a happier person in the end. Yeah? All right. I'm going to flip through some of these slides real quick and make sure that I've kind of covered everything. Second law, read the manual or you will fail. Third law, objects, talked about those. This is a fun trick. I should show you this. Let's say I needed to get a bunch of information from a bunch of computers. One way that you can provide multiple computer names is just with a little list. How many of you are excited? How many computers do you have in your environment? More than three? Yeah? Okay. Well, maybe you could have a text file that lists computer names one line at a time. That'd be a good way to maybe categorize them, right? Have a file with all the domain controllers, one with your SQL servers, one with your SharePoint servers, whatever else. And with a little parenthetical, you could read that file in, computers.txt. Everybody remember algebra? Who was good at it? Leave. I sucked at algebra. But I remember parentheses mean do this first, right? Well, so that's all it's doing. It's running that command first, and whatever that command produces gets jammed into the computer name parameter. How many of you already have text files listing all of your different categories of computers by name? A few folks. What about the rest of you? Do you have some sort of magical central place where all the computer names are listed? So you can get all the computer, except that these are computer objects that that's going to produce, and they've got a lot of different properties, and we really just want their name. So I would say select object, just expand out the name property for me. That's a great little trick. That will run it against every computer in the directory, which could be fun, you know, especially if it's your last day at work. But there are other parameters of get AD computer that you can plug in to limit that down to a particular OU, or you can give it a filter other than star. Again, that is part of the Active Directory module, which exists on the server, the DC, and if you've installed the RSAT, the Remote Server Administration Toolkit, then that drops the PowerShell module onto a Windows 7 machine for you as well. So you can get that. It's all free and wonderful. So let's go back to slide action here for just a few seconds, make sure I got everything else. Redirecting, we talked about that. We played with formatting. This is that crazy custom property syntax, so that's in there. We talked about objects. Format. Oh, yeah, that's cool, too. We did that. WMI, we used that a little bit. We played with the pipeline parameter binding. I showed you a script. Amazing. And I still have time left for questions. So Again, I'm going to leave this URL up there for just a few seconds until somebody asks me a question that makes me want to shift back to the shell. But if you want to see almost any of these demos again, sometimes even more cogently done because I could plan them, you can just hop up to my YouTube page, and you'll also find lots of other stuff. There's also a great book there that I and my mortgage company appreciate your support on. So hit me up with a couple questions. I've got like two more cool things I'm going to show you before you go, but I want to make sure I take any pressing questions that are outstanding. Anything, just shoot your hand up. Nope. Oh, yes. Go right ahead. You're near a floor mic too, which is excellent.
My question is, I want to see the get member of a CMDLet that accepts a mandatory parameter. So, I mean, I have a commandlet, but it accepts a parameter, but I don't have one, but I want to see the get member. Is there a way to do that?
So get member does not show you parameters of a command. Get member shows you what a command produces. If you want to see, so you're asking, I've got a command and I want to see which parameters are mandatory? Yep, that would be the help. And there's a couple of ways you can look at this. I'll show you the easy way, because I know that's what everybody wants. What's a good one? Event log. When you see a parameter like this one, where the entire parameter, including its name and its value, are not in square brackets, it is mandatory. Now, the parameter name is in square brackets, which means if you want to provide a log name, you do not have to type minus logname. You can just provide a string, the log name, in the first position, which is where this is located. But because the entire parameter isn't in square brackets, it's mandatory. It's probably more straightforward if you look at the full help, and it will just tell you it's required. And so you can figure it all out that way. Help files, your friend. Here's another cool one. How many of you have ever spent a long time debugging something only to find out that some everybody's like, yes, me. Only to find out that some property, the reason your script didn't work is because there was some property or some variable, and you thought it contained the word disk, and it actually contained the number 8, right? Finding out what data is there is hugely important. So what you can do is this. Just grab the first one of whatever, because it keeps the output shorter. Pipe it to format list. Minus property star. In fact, you will see so many people use this technique that they won't type that all out. They'll use the alias FL, and they'll just pass star as a parameter, and they'll say it like this. Oh, yeah, just pipe it to FL star. And the first time somebody tells you to pipe it to FL star, you're like, I'll pipe it to... But they're just giving you a command, because that will display not only all the properties, but it shows you all the data that's inside of it, too. So you don't have to guess or make assumptions, because you know what happens when you make assumptions. Your script breaks. And so this way you can find out exactly what data is in there. Gentleman over here had a question. I'm a hero. I answered it, and you didn't. We have ESPN, you and I. Yes? Error handling. We're not going to go into here, but I'll show you where to find it. It's in the boot file. About try, catch, finally. It's pretty straightforward. Have you used try, catch in something like C#? It's almost exactly the same. Yeah. And I'm going to ask a couple of questions. So just shoot your hand up if you have experience with one of these languages. C#, Perl, Python, PHP, JavaScript. All of those are C-based languages, and their syntax is so close to PowerShells that you'll be able to leverage a lot of that when it comes to scripting, you know, ifs and loops and switches and things like that. I had one more question. I saw a hand shoot up just a second ago. Yeah. So loading different modules. Are you asking because of the specific, like the AD shell and the SharePoint shell? And yeah, I hate that. So. Here's the thing. This is like a huge secret that nobody wants you to know. So don't tell anyone I told you, okay? There's only one PowerShell. Right? There's only one Highlander. There's only one PowerShell. That's just the deal. When you see these Exchange Management Shell icons on your start menu or the SharePoint Management Shell or the whatever else management shell, right-click that in the Start menu and look at its properties. It's just running PowerShell.exe and then pre-importing a module or a snap-in, or sometimes they run a script that imports several different things. You can do that yourself. You can open up a naked PowerShell. That's what I call this one, the naked PowerShell. And you can just run import module and import all the modules that your heart desires and get them all running in one place. Now, with version 3, if everything's set up right and you've got everything installed right, you don't even have to import them anymore. You can just run the command. PowerShell will say, oh, no, you don't have that. Instead of saying, you don't have that loaded, it's over here, it'll actually take the next step and go, why don't I load it for you? So it's like the first time you run the command, it'll hesitate for a second while it thinks about it, and then it'll just run it. So, yes? Write progress. Yeah, so you guys have noticed a couple of times when I ran help, it popped up that sort of ASCII progress bar thing with the blue and the yellow. That's what this does. So if you've got a script that's enumerating through a bunch of different things, you can use this. And there's a couple of ways it'll display. If you actually want it to display a progress bar, you've got to give it a percent complete between 0 and 100. And then you just run the command again to give it a new number, and it will redraw that display for you. The only time it'll get a little bit weird is if you're producing a lot of scrolling output, it gets flashy because it has to redraw that on top of the output every time. But you know, I'll tell you the best place to find examples for that. This is going to kill you, but it's in the help file. There's a woman sitting over here who probably spent a day of her life writing these examples, and so you know, I want to make sure everybody reads those. June waved everybody. June's on the help team with Windows PowerShell. You can thank her for the great examples. So, I am going to wrap us up. Again, the whole slide deck is going to be available to you, so you'll have all that stuff. I've got a YouTube channel with a gazillion different videos you can watch. If you're really looking, or if you're working with somebody who's looking for a way to learn PowerShell, and they want to do it in a way that's not going to try and make them a programmer by chapter 3, learn Windows PowerShell in a month of lunches. It's got a zero starting point. You don't have to know anything about anything to get into the book. And it's an hour a day. That's all it asks, is an hour of your time. It's got hands-on labs. There's companion videos that go with it. And it will walk you through the whole process. That will get you to its website. That will get you to my online forum. You can get there via morelunches.com, too. So if you need to ask a question, please don't hesitate. And guys, if nothing else, go home, pick a project, not the biggest project. Don't try to solve world hunger. Pick a project and try and automate it in PowerShell. Yeah, you're going to bang your head against it for a while. That's how we learn, right? We make the mistakes, and then we get past them, and we learn. I'll help you. There's a whole community of MVPs out there that will help you. Just get into it and start doing it. If you haven't started playing with PowerShell, you are right up against the deadline. When Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8 ship, this is a mandatory skill you have to have. Don't put this off any longer. Make it happen. Really get into this and make this a big part of your IT toolkit. So, if I can find the right space bar, here's some more URLs for you. This is where you can get to my blog. This is where you can get to my forums. This is where you can find me on Twitter. And anything else, I'll be doing a session on PowerShell remoting secrets tomorrow morning, so everybody who doesn't get wasted at the attendee party tonight will be there. Probably me and him. Please hit me up, ask questions, get into the shell, and enjoy. Thank you.